cliffcentral.com.
All right, listen. There's not a single second to waste this morning. Justice is coming in early. I don't know if you've seen, Justice has been talking to Christian Amanpour. He's been the go-to guy about everything to do with the budget, the current state of the ANC, everything else. Nationally and internationally, this man is... I'm so happy we got him here because it's like a direct channel to the oracle of South African politics, and that's not saying too much. Apart from his book, which is prophetic in so many ways, you know, he said that certain directions the country can move in, and he pretty much predicted it. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's every Thursday here on cliffcentral.com. We will start early this morning, but you know that doesn't really affect a lot of people because most people download the podcast. That's right. That's how we operate here, right, Ben?
Yep, the podcast is the way of the future.
That way you can listen whenever it suits you. In other words, Justice is like on speed dial. You just call him up and hear what he has to say. So he'll be in at 6:30. He's got some very, very important stuff to get done today. And when Justice says he has important stuff to do, I don't argue with him. So we moved him to 6:30, which means that we'll do the sport a little bit later and we'll check in on the money markets after that. Lots to get through. But there is so much to talk about. Yesterday was Pravin's big day. There weren't really any major, major surprises, but he did say a couple of things that I think are worth reflecting on, and we'll get to those with Justice. No point in me giving you my breakdown because I don't know as much as Justice does. All I did think was kind of interesting is that he's brought in a sugar tax on soda, which is it's long overdue. It's such an obvious way for us to, A, cut down on drinks that are bad for us.
Tax all the vices, all the drugs.
Right. And sugar. But legalize. Listen, if you're going to do this to sugar, then let's do it to... Dacha. Please, can we just legalize Dacha?
Exactly.
Do you know how many people in this country, small-scale farmers, like in the Eastern Cape and in KZN, would grow so much weed, and they wouldn't have to fear the police coming and burning down their fields, which is what happens. They would be able to sell it as a cash crop. And do you know how good it would be for people in this country who are so uptight? You see it all the time. Angry people everywhere. Mub said it the other day. Let's all smoke a bit of weed. And I don't mean everybody who doesn't want to. I mean, I don't. But if you want to, you should be allowed to without fear.
Tourism?
Right.
People would come here and smoke a joint quickly.
Well, that's it. I mean, come on. Why are we going after these people? I mean, small-scale farmers, can you imagine? They'd make a cash crop. They'd be able to charge money for it. They could sell it on the market. They could actually earn a living. There are so many people who live in rural areas in this country who don't have any income. They can't grow enough to sell because unless you're a large-scale farmer in this country, forget about it. You're not going to make big money. But little cash crops like Dacha, why not? Right?
I want to talk about land redistribution, all that kind of stuff. You can sell small parcels of land that can do this.
Yeah. What was it that Anthea said yesterday about how much money... the legalization of Dacha is bringing into a country like the U.S., for example.
Yeah, and there, what, like three states you can do it in?
Yeah, so...
it's a big, big business,
It'd be good for the economy as well.
I think so. I don't think it would be a problem. I think it would be very good for all of us.
I heard that the only reason we're not doing it is because we can't control it.
Yeah, well, that's it.
That people will go make their own farms, not pay tax, and make their own profits.
Well, you know what? They could do that with tobacco, too. They could do that with... you could do that with cocaine if you wanted to. You could grow the coca plant, but nobody's doing it, are they?
No.
So, what a cuck excuse.
In Amsterdam, it works very well, and it's very controlled, and there's law for Dacha, and it works.
Look, I think there's this hysteria about drugs in this country. You don't realize... if you're a parent, I got to tell you something now that's going to... shake you to your core if you don't already know this. But if you're a parent of any kid under the age of 25 and over the age of 10, somewhere in their life, at this stage or in the future, they're going to try something and they're going to get hold of it and they might like it and they might keep on trying. You might not even know. I mean, there might not be a problem, but your kid might be on something right now. It is the exception to the rule not to be trying something.
But chances are most people are more addicted to stuff that they get from their pharmacists over the counter stuff anyway.
Mm, sleeping pills, big thing in South Africa.
Painkillers.
Yeah, you know what? That's a very good point. There are people addicted, parents now, forget about the kids. Parents who are addicted to sleeping tablets, who are addicted to antidepressants. We've got a big problem in this country in terms of that. So let's stop denying it and let's try and find a way to make those less dangerous crops like dacha. Let's make it useful. Let's add that money to the fiscus. You heard what was brought up yesterday when we were talking about the budget. And Praveen has to find really creative new ways to bring money in. This could be one of them. I mean, we're looking for solutions here, right? Not problems.
Exactly. But you get these people on their moral high donkeys that go, oh, we can't have dacha. Oh, but corruption and all the other crap. Yeah, let's go with that, though.
Right. And I think that's way more dangerous than a little bit of weed.
So much more dangerous.
Yeah, correct. So, Sia, what's up?
It's a Thursday.
How does it feel to be 21 today? No. You've been 21 for almost a month.
3 weeks-ish. Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounds very short now that I put it that way. You guys, it's quarter to the weekend. That's all I'm thinking about right now.
Yeah, it's nice, huh? I love Thursdays because you just know it's downhill from here on in.
Exactly.
And of course, being Thursday.
It's Pooza Thursday.
You'll talk about another addiction.
It's now Pooza with tax Thursday.
Yeah, how much more? Almost R4 for hard liquor. And I don't drink beer, so I could care less. I also don't drink cider and wine that much. I mean, wine, you know, I'll have at smart dinners and things. But I'm not a big drinker of those things. So if you are a big drinker, then you're going to pay a lot more, rightly so.
And a smoker.
Maybe it'll put you off. Oh, I get a call yesterday from my dad. He's like, budget.
Was he grumpy?
No, well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's like, what do you think of the budget? So,
what do you think of the budget?
So I said, no, well, I don't know because I'm not an expert, but it seems like, you know, the usual suspects, sin taxes, fuel levy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and smoking.
Because, you know, he smokes. Like, yeah, and smoking. What are you going to do about that?
Well, it's not as big an increase as I thought, but I think I should still stop.
Yes, I think you should. Wouldn't it be great if Praveen Gordon was the one who persuaded you, Dad? Because I never could.
Yeah, you're right. You never could.
If Praveen Gordon gets this right, then he's the most persuasive man in history, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to cut right down. You know, I haven't had a cigarette since I left the office today. It's now 8 o'clock.
Seriously, that's what he told me.
Wow.
I don't know. I think a lot of people evaluate this stuff. Because look, let's face it. It's your wallet, right? That's where it's going to hit. So if you are being taxed more, and we're all going to be taxed more, the fuel levy is going to cost everybody. From people who catch taxis, to people who drive their own cars, to people who are transporting goods across the country, those prices are all going to go up. So everyone gets hit when times are bad. And economically, this is not the greatest time. The stock market didn't do very much after Praveen had his say, and we'll talk about that later on. But everybody's looking at this going, all right, now where can I save? What can I cut back on? What can I do to just make ends meet? Forget about trying to be rich. It's not going to happen, not this year, for anyone. The world's economy is a little bit stagnant right now. So what we've got to do is just consolidate, right? Sell what you don't need. Stop the bad habits. Cut the bleeding on your account wherever you can. If there are debit orders that can go, chop them. If there are certain things that you like to buy but you can't afford anymore, expensive shoes, clothes, you know, maybe instead of buying the expensive cut of meat or fish at the supermarket, you try going for cheaper stuff. I don't know. We're all looking at it, right?
I'm not buying salmon anymore.
It's
too expensive.
Have you seen how much
it costs? You used to buy salmon?
I can't afford to buy salmon.
And I love salmon, but I can't eat it anymore.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. You can't have too much of that anyway. There's mercury in it, isn't there?
Oh.
Yeah, well, all those fish, the mercury goes up the food chain. gets stronger and stronger as you go up, and then eventually you take it in and it stays in your bones and you're... That's bad.
Yep, that's comforting.
Read about it. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So where are you going to save? I mean, what can you cut? Seriously. What can you chop out of the budget?
Well, a good starting point is to have a look at all the subscriptions that you have and seriously consider when's the last time you used some of them and whether they should stay or not.
So like satellite TV. That can go.
That can go. Do you have magazine subscriptions? Why are you still subscribing to a magazine when you can get your stuff offline? Things like that.
Right.
But this is also the time where we give up on the New Year's resolution of going to gym.
Well, that's the thing. It's a lot of people flooded to the gym in January, and that's probably
a subscription you could cancel if you're not going.
They'll probably not see the gym until next year, January, but they'll still be paying every month.
Yeah, but you got to keep going because then the medical bills of you being like unhealthy and lazy.
Yeah, that's true.
Definitely get higher.
You know what? I don't think there's going to be a lot of traveling this year for most of us.
No.
Because that's expensive stuff. Traveling is really expensive. Accommodation, transport, flights there and back, food, all that kind of thing. So that's a luxury item. That's got to go.
Maybe you need to change where you buy your clothes. I mean, are you still going into those high-end...
No. From now on, it's what are Pep Stores and Ackermans, right?
You live a very high life in Bali Malloy, buying salmon and clothes.
She does. Oh, yes, she does.
Going horse riding.
Horse riding.
These are very expensive.
In her jodhpurs from high-end stores. Wow.
I wish.
What are you going to cut, Sia?
You
don't have... real indulgence. You know what? We could all cut like liquor. We could definitely cut that out of there. Mm. It's unnecessary, right? If you're not addicted, you don't need it.
If you're not addicted.
Well, I mean, there are lots
so
of people.
Only the addicts buy liquor.
People say, "Oh no, I don't have a problem with drinking," but you take it away from them, and they don't know what to do. That means you're addicted.
Mm. So the thought that I'm kind of not liking cutting it out is bad.
Yeah, because you know, for me. The only reason I ever drink is because I don't dance, and if I'm not DJing, I don't go out. And if I do go out with friends, sometimes you just drink to make them more interesting, or sometimes you drink because that's just something to do. It's not even something that you need to do. Like, don't tell me you're so desperately in love with the taste of, say, whiskey or brandy. Or you don't need that in your life.
No, that's...
It's not that great.
Doesn't taste great.
No.
I think I can personally cut out on food on the go.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't actually...
Oh, like takeaways and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you convince yourself...
Are you sure you can? Because you eat a lot of takeaways.
But then it will also help me in hindsight with actual proper meal preparation and putting thought into what I'll eat. Not just McDonald's all the time.
What about you, Flex? Can you save anywhere?
You see, I'm not the problem. They need to lower the tax on alcohol.
I'm not the problem. Mm. They'll never lower that tax. That's going to stay up there and keep climbing.
Soon it's going to be like 10 grand to get a bottle of like...
cheap shit.
Tequila.
Yeah. Watch.
Vodka.
Yeah. Watch.
What?
He calls it vodka.
Yeah.
I need to make richer friends now. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Why do you call it vodka when...
Is he from Russia?
Yeah, you're not Russian.
You're Russian.
Vodka. You said vodka.
I said the same as everybody else.
No. Vodka.
Vodka.
Still a little bit vo.
Instead vodka. Of figuring out where I can realize. Save, yeah. I can rather figure out how to make richer friends.
Yeah, but then they end up paying for you. Do you want to be that schlub?
Yeah, but when you're so rich, you don't even feel it.
But you don't want to be a schmuck who hangs around with people just because they have money. Come on.
Ach, a they can in smell a club.
That. They can smell that from a mile away. They'll eventually go, oh, Flex is such a schnorrer. He hangs around with us because we got money. It'll happen.
You just need one in the group.
Yeah, but then eventually, what, do you think that person isn't feeling the pinch? Rich people don't feel tax increases and general cost of living upscaling?
There's no way billionaires feel anything.
Dude, billionaires don't... They don't walk around with their billions. I mean... You can only have so much cash in your wallet, and then you still have to use normal instruments. And trust me, they're also swiping their credit cards and looking at the bills. Trust me, they are. How do you think they got to be billionaires?
And also, billionaires are very picky with their friends because they don't want the kind of people who leech from them, Flex. Mm. They want to hang out with other billionaires, not average people like
and
us.
And in this country, there are not that many billionaires to go around to pay for all the rest of our drinks.
flawed plan.
Yeah, I think you must go back to the drawing board on that one.
But also with that, there aren't a lot of billionaires with billions in the bank readily available.
Exactly.
Right? When you calculate their billions.
Right. They're mostly invested in stuff or they've got their money tied up. It's overseas. It's in shares and stocks. It's in their house. It's in assets that they've paid for or are paying off.
See, I was more thinking about walking around with like a friend like Floyd Mayweather. Who just has bags of money behind him.
But you know what's going to happen there, right? You know what Floyd's... He's going to end up with no money.
No,
like Mike Tyson. Watch. Like Mike Tyson or like MC Hammer. Because those guys live this flashy life, but they don't have the money to back it up. Please. Anyway, look, we'll talk about that later on, but I think the budget is on everyone's mind. We've got Justice Malala popping in a short while with the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's. And some news, and we'll check in on some sport and everything else that you need to know this morning. What I got here? Stuff to talk to you about. Wow. Avi. You know Avi who messages us every morning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From New York, right?
Yeah, he's in New York. The Oscars ceremony is on Sunday. He sent a picture. PwC, that's, you know, he works for PricewaterhouseCoopers. A long history of receiving the ballots, preparing the winning envelopes, and taking them to the award ceremony on the day. So in anticipation of the Oscars ceremony on Sunday, I thought I'd share my moment with the actual Oscars briefcase and the winning envelope for Best Picture.
Wow.
Plus, you get to see how ugly I am. And he's not a bad-looking guy.
No.
No. Avi, you look good, Avi.
You're not ugly. Cheapers.
See, you're the one who hits on all our guests. What do you think of Avi? What would you rate him out of 10? Give him a rating.
I have to squint a bit there. Oh, no, no, that's a good 7.
He's a good-looking dude, right? 7.
7.
All right.
Will that be the official?
These will be taken.
I'd do anything with a heartbeat and two legs.
That's the actual Best Picture envelope and the actual Oscars briefcase. These will be taken by two partners in the firm on Sunday to the awards. If you want to know the winners, you have to tune in like everyone else, though. He can't open the thing. It's, you know. But isn't that cool?
Wow.
Don't tell me we don't have important people listening to us here, paying attention.
I sort of feel like if Leonardo doesn't win an Oscar,
yeah,
then I'm just done with the Oscars.
Like, really?
There's
you're
no point. The guy's been trying so hard for nothing.
You're that invested in Leonardo DiCaprio.
Only because of the hype you guys have been making about it.
I don't care who wins. I don't care. I don't even want to watch the Oscars.
About
you know
him
that.
For The Revenant.
Nah, it's just funny that bear didn't get nominated. That's what I find funny. There's some more emails I got to get through just now, but let me quickly give you a look at the lineup for today. Open Book with Lois Obala is on today. He's going to be doing his thing where they talk about all kinds of spiritual and religious stuff. It's probably the only show of its kind that I can think of on the channel. And certainly there are very few of these shows in South Africa. But if you want to hear about those things from someone who has built an incredible reputation for himself and is a well-respected guy, but he's also a really good role model. And I don't say that easily. Lois Obala, between 9 and 10. 10 to 11, Somi Zimhlongo and Alan Ford. Not role models, either of them.
Somizi always...
The opposite of role models.
Somizi usually says something along the lines of how they need to be blessed or whatever by Loyuso, because when they take over the studio after him, it just goes in the opposite direction of what Loyuso was doing.
It turns from good and pure into evil and dirty. Anyway, that's not entirely fair, because sometimes they do very, very cool stuff as well that has nothing to do with their filthy sex lives. Jenny Morris is the award-winning celebrity chef. She will be in, talking about her cooking show. And then they've got Clayton Marah, who's just got back from the Grammy Awards, to talk about what went down. And Alan Committee will talk about his new place. So there's lots of entertainment in there. Dumisho Masha with Monwabi Sitete and Black Life is on after that. Then it's Gentlemen by Choice. They are talking about UP and WITS SRC members. You know, they were all at university together. That's Simpiwe and Lesego and Weza. And yesterday, if you missed Frankly Speaking with Rory and Andrew, that would be a show to listen to. 2 hours where they went and actually spoke to the students on various campuses. Got their feelings on what's really going on there. And a lot of people are watching clips on social media and getting the wrong idea about what's happening. If you want the truth, listen to Frankly Speaking yesterday. In depth, with points of view from everyone from Buyisen Ndlozi of the EFF to students on the ground at WITS, at Tux, at the University of the Free State.
You know, I was looking at these students after the show yesterday, and they look tiny to me, right?
Yeah.
And I was listening to these guys tell me about how many times they've been arrested, and I thought to myself, this is insane.
Yeah. Well, you know, for some people, that's the reason to go to varsity. This is where you get to stamp your ID, you know, with your memberships. But I do think they've got to be careful, because ultimately, even when you finish university and you've been a big activist and everyone on campus thinks you're a hero, you still have to get a job. And when people see that you've been arrested for activism over and over again, I don't know that many conservative big corporations are going to be looking to hire you. So you've got to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that were here yesterday say they don't have any criminal records, because seemingly police just usually round these kids up, they lock them up for the night, and then they send them home, and they don't charge them with anything. But still, you know?
Yeah, I just think what's going on the campuses at the moment is no different to what always goes on campuses, except that there is an element of violence that we just need to be aware of. And when there are fires lit, like at Northwest University, I saw some pictures of that yesterday, I get nervous, because you're destroying the infrastructure and the resources that you need to learn. So whatever your political ambitions there, it's going to come second to what you learn, and therefore second to your growth as a person. Just hold on. Everybody calm down, like I said yesterday. You know? I don't think anybody needs to rush to do stupid things. Think about it a couple of times before you go and join a march or hit a person or set fire to a building. You're stepping ever and ever closer to making yourself look like you're just a vandal rather than someone who has a genuine gripe. And there are, by the way, you're at a university, a place of higher learning. There are better ways to make your voice heard. I don't buy this bullshit that there are no other ways for students to be heard. I don't buy it for a second.
It's just, where are they going to go in life after this? Because if this whole fees may fall, I mean, what happens next? Like, tax must fall.
But Ben,
unpaid leave must fall.
Ben, it's
HR must fall.
It's like anything. You know what happened here was, you complain enough, you get a statue removed. So you start thinking you're powerful.
Yeah, but...
And then you want everything for free, and you expect everyone to lay out the red carpet for you. And that's kind of where people are at the moment. And unfortunately, what's going to happen is that some people are going to be arrested. They're going to spend the next 7 years of their life, instead of studying, in jail for destroying stuff. And when you spend 7 years of your life in jail and you come out and you try to look for a job, it's much, much harder than if you just got your degree. That's all I'm saying. I'm not judging. If you want to complain, if you want to protest, if you want to destroy stuff, that's entirely your business. But understand there are real consequences in the real world. That's not my decision. It's not my judgment. That's someone else's. Justice Malala is very busy, so this morning we're going to start with the Burning Platform at 6:30. That's coming up next.
It's date night, and your wife wants you to bring Ray to bed with you. You suggested Tyrion, or maybe even Sheldon if she fancied something a little different. But no, Ray Donovan it is. So you get your tablet and you meet her in the bedroom. Because with Showmax for 99 Rand a month, you get to watch full seasons of the biggest series. On the couch, in the kitchen, in bed. Online anytime. So get to Showmax.com and get your 7-day free trial.
All right, it is a Thursday morning. It's the 25th of February. It's the day after the budget, so all anyone is talking about is breaking down what Pravin said yesterday, and there's a lot to digest. So without wasting any time, without making any noise, without substantiating rubbish, let's get to the person who can make it all seem sensible to us. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's, every Thursday on cliffcentral.com.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Well, Justice, you're a very much in demand man at the moment. Wow, I see you on international news networks. I see you talking to virtually every major publication that has any credibility. And I see you delivering comments on all kinds of things, from student protests to budgets to everything else.
Yeah, hey, it's a busy time. I think it's one of those things. I mean, we always think on this show that we'll never have anything to talk about. Today we're going to talk about happiness. Look at Mabale, huh? Isn't that nice?
Does she look happy?
She looks happy. I mean, Pravin got an the whole of the past month, everyone's been saying, yeah, no, you know, we're going to be taxed. Oh, we're going to be taxed.
Yeah.
So personal income tax, everyone is saying, oh, it's going to go, what is it, 41%, 45% maybe. Oh, my mother is just going to be taxed to death. And look at that smile. She's happy.
Because he didn't.
He didn't.
It's also because I found myself a wealthy man. That's the reason I'm smiling, Justice. I'm just going to put it out there.
Lucky. Isn't there a tax on husbands or partner?
There should be a husband or wife tax. That would be fun.
Something like that.
So let's just start with Praveen and the budget yesterday. There was quite a lot said. Obviously, this budget, there were huge and high expectations.
Mm.
But I think a lot of people are secretly quite relieved about where he's decided to increase income. And most especially where he's decided to cut back on expenditure.
Yes, I thought he was quite creative. I mean, who'd have thought of a sugar tax?
Yeah, nice one.
You know, I mean, it's a nice one. It's one of those. It's, well, you know, who's really gonna suffer from this? Maybe it's good for health. So it's a lovely little thing. So there've been inventive ways in which he managed to plug the hole that everyone was saying the South African budget has. That where's the money going to come from? Where's the money going? So the expectation was that he'd go for all of us. He'd go for corporates. He would essentially tinkle with tax, and that he might even go for a VAT increase. And that would have hit my mother, your mom, everyone gets hit with a VAT.
From the rich to the poor.
So does
a fuel list. Really, if you think about it, because everything goes up if fuel goes up.
Yes, that's true, and that 30-cent fuel levy increase has that potential. But I think he's betting on the fact that, think about oil prices over the past year, they've plunged from more than $100 a barrel to what is it, $30 at the moment. It's really gone down. So the increase is, in a way, offset by the cheapness of the oil price.
Well, we will be speaking to Tamsin Nell later on, a portfolio manager at Anchor Capital, about, and she works with Anthea Gardner. We'll talk to her about what the budget breakdown is for everybody in great detail.
Yeah,
so that'll be much more of a money discussion. But I think there were a couple of things he said that have huge political implications. The civil service, state-owned enterprises, what do we have to say about that stuff?
Okay, I think if you were to ask me what's my takeaway from this budget, I thought he did incredibly well on saying, okay, we go into this budget. The biggest thing we're facing is a ratings downgrade.
Yeah.
Everyone is talking about us going to junk status. That has massive implications for borrowing and so forth. And so he spoke to all of those things, but did he go far enough? Let's talk about a great subject for us here on the show. We talk a lot about SAA because SAA...
Right.
embodies all the problems that state-owned enterprises has. You have a board that doesn't work. You don't have a CEO. You don't have a COO. You don't have a chief financial officer. You don't have all these things. So what is needed there is someone to go in deep and say, we're going to fix this thing, or we're going to get rid of it and let someone who runs airlines run this airline. We're no longer going to pour money into this and so forth. So what does he do? I felt that he, instead of going there, of being brave, he says, well, we'll merge the boards of SA Express and SAA.
Yeah. And he did mention there are four airlines, and I had to rack my brain, but it's SAA properly.
Yeah, SAA Express.
There's SAA Express, SAA Air Link. And then there's Mango.
Then there's Mango. So we are invested in four airlines.
Right.
So he spoke about the two. And then he says, and then we'll sell a minority stake basically to someone.
By the way, the EFF went crazy when that happened because they suddenly said, privatization, which is a very dangerous word in this country because there are a lot of people who believe anything to do with privatization is a
terrible.
Very bad idea.
So you have an ideological battle looming there. But earlier on at his press conference in the morning, he'd actually said, I didn't mention the P word.
Yeah.
And you know, there's been a long thing going on about, you know, private-public partnerships and so forth and so forth. So I don't think he actually went the whole hog and said, let's go privatization. For me, if I run British Airways or I run Ethiopia Airways or I run Comair, if I'm going to go to SAA and say I'm going to spend a lot of money buying a stake in your business, I want to be able to say, well, the first thing I'd like to do is get rid of people, change the way we work. We could serve better chicken or beef and so forth and so forth. If that minority stake doesn't give people the kind of control that they need,
which it won't,
then there's a problem here.
Who's going to invest in, who would you take out of every 100 rand you earn, would you take 5 rand and put it into SAA, or would you put it somewhere else?
When you can't do the deep, deep restructuring that you need to do at that parastatal. So for me, it's, oh, okay, you've said the right thing, but is it the right thing to do for SAA? Because SAA needs some serious work.
Yeah.
And then further on the parastatal, he didn't go to any others and say, you know what, so the threat is that you shape up or you know, we're going to get rid of you. Well, I mean, we know the ones that don't work. Mark Barnes was in Parliament the other day. That's the post office.
And I mean, he's just been slapped really hard by the public protector.
Exactly. So the key thing for me is there are 300 or so state-owned enterprises.
That many?
There are that many. I
heard him mention that they are responsible for 27% of the GDP.
Exactly. And you've got inside those SOEs, there are companies hidden inside them. So the number goes, some say, to 400 or so.
Good Lord.
So there's a lot of companies in there that we don't need, we shouldn't have. Some were started, and he said it in the speech, that, you know, some of them go back to apartheid days when, you know, we're sitting at the post office, let's start a little company to do this and to do that and
like,
so forth.
Like the arms manufacturers.
The arms manufacturers.
That was built during apartheid, and we've never dismantled it.
We haven't dismantled that. And what else is still lurking around in its cupboard with a little company offshore and so forth and so forth. So that's all that. So I didn't feel like he actually went the whole hog and said, state-owned enterprises, they've been draining us of cash. We keep on bailing out. And, he started well. He started right at the beginning of the speech. He said, people have told us what they want. What is it? They don't want corruption and wastage bailing out state-owned enterprises. But in the actual addressing of the issue, I didn't feel that he said, okay, it's time to stop bailing them out. It's time to, you know, there's a moratorium. I'm not giving you money. You have to go out and borrow money yourself. And if you don't, you can't return it on your life. So
none of these state-owned enterprises are getting a bailout?
Well, he's saying not, but...
He's saying he's turning the taps right now.
Well, he's closing the tap. But to be honest, what happens when...
If the SABC...
The SABC comes along and says, we've run out of money.
They're not going to just let it fall down.
My biggest problem is that he didn't say, you know what, we're gonna sell you off to people who are going to have a board, who are going to be, who have their money in there and are going to say, you know what, I'm sorry, you can't just lose 500 million or 1 billion or 3 billion.
Yeah.
That is what Moody's and S&P and all the other guys were expecting to hear. So we've had about one SOE, and that's SAA and SA Express. I mean, it's the same thing, really. But I didn't feel that on state-owned enterprises that he went deep enough, that he went far enough. Mm. And I think that's where, if you were to say how well did he do, I would say he did very, very well in one, finding money for the next year at least, where many of us didn't see where he'd find money. So we've got some relief, and maybe the tax hikes will come next year. But for now, he's found money in other little places, and that's a good thing. The other one is the big wage bill. The state essentially gave public sector wage workers a massive increase, 7%, plus benefits of about 3%. We had a little kitty of 65 million rand last year, and he wiped that off. Not him, Nhlanhla Nene and his colleagues in National Treasury basically were forced to do that. So for me, one of the things that hangs over this budget is that he didn't give specifics about we've got so many civil servants. So many of them have their jackets on the back of the chair and don't actually do much work. And this is how many we're going to get rid of. What he did was that we want to save, was it 25 billion rand every year over the next 3 years? And that is through procurement and so forth and so forth. So the question will remain, you know, are you going to continue with this massive bloated public service, or are you going to really cut? And I'm not sure that he's cutting. He is saying that, you know, if there's an opening come up, then you have to
freeze the position.
You have to freeze the position. You have to fight for it to be refilled and so forth. But I didn't think that he took the scalpel.
You imagine the pressure. There's got to be huge pressure politically on him.
There is massive pressure.
You know, because he's working for a party who really didn't cheer very much at his budget. and they're not happy that someone is in control who is not their benefactor.
Yeah.
But didn't he get a massive standing ovation at the end, barring the DA?
I think it's quite interesting that, you know, Pravin Gordhan flew economy class last week from Cape Town to Joburg. Last night, people were tweeting about the fact that he flew economy from Cape Town to Joburg. On Tuesday, I flew to Joburg. I flew Joburg to Cape Town. And I have to tell you, business class, there were two ministers in business class. And so one of the things for me is, how much political backing does he have to achieve all these things that he wants to achieve?
Yeah.
Is President Zuma and Gordon's cabinet colleagues, if he says, guys, we got to lead by example, let's cut down, are the other guys going to do it, or are they going to turn around and say,
no, we're here to eat?
No.
You know,
they don't care.
And so you know, you can't have a budget that is driven by one minister. It's got to have buy-in.
And if the average person in South Africa has to pay more for fuel, we have to pay a tax on this, exactly, a tax on that, a tax on the other. We've got our municipal taxes. We've got Eskom bills. We've got all these things that are weighing down on us. It means that we're maybe, if we're lucky, we take 30 to 40% of what we earn home, and we can actually use that.
Yeah.
Because that's the reality.
That's the reality.
When you add all the other things in, that's probably what we're all getting. Now, if we all have to take 30 to 40%, seems to me that you could probably get a better deal in Angola. Or you could get, you know, there are lots of countries where you might get a better deal. But the fact is, if we're going to do it, then some government ministers need to also, you know, exactly, give up some perks.
It's not just coming to the party, though. It's also being seen to come to the party and to be saying, I'm with you on this one.
Other ministers, imagine them also flying coach.
That would be amazing to have ministers in economy class. Why is it? And I think this is where also just the pronouncements need to filter through to the way we work in general. So one of the things that the ministers will tell you is that, oh, you know, but the ministerial handbook, I don't book these things. My office will look at the ministerial handbook, and they'll, you know, they'll book me in business class, and my bodyguards and my PA and so forth will go in, economy. Now, if that is the case, and if, you know, I can't go outside of the ministerial handbook, let's change the ministerial handbook and make sure that actually it flows with the times, it's congruent with the times. But no, that hasn't happened. So I think the political backing and the show of political backing has to happen straight from President Zuma, mm-hmm, Cyril Ramaphosa, the deputy president, and his cabinet colleagues. And you know, the deep cuts that have to be made, whether it's parties in parliament and so forth, he can't do it alone. And it can't be, oh, the finance minister, oh, he's such a nice guy.
Having said all of that, though, he is the most powerfully placed finance minister we've ever had.
He is incredibly powerfully placed. If you think about it, Pravin Gordhan, whatever one might say about this speech, has the trust of the business community, of the investor community.
Right.
He's got so many. With him came along a sense that, you know what, we've got a fighting chance to deal with the lack of growth, to deal with the ratings agencies and so forth and so forth. So if President Zuma, and you know, there's been rumors running around that, oh, you know, he's just using him, he's gonna get rid of him in the next few weeks and so forth, and you get those sorts of rumors. If he does even dare to fire Pravin Gordhan next week, the week after, or the next 6 months, or the next year, can you imagine what happened to the rand on December 9, 2015?
This would be even worse.
It would be a picnic. What happened then would be a picnic compared to this. South Africa would get downgraded within a week. Our rand would be junk. We would go to 30 rand to the dollar. I mean, it would be absolute disaster. So I think any kind of thinking that, oh, you know, we'll deal with this guy would be quite a thing to contemplate.
Let's talk about something else that's going on at the moment, which is quite big news, and we're trying to...
Can I... One last thing on the budget.
Oh, sure, of course.
I thought that you raised the issue of the applause and so forth. Can I just say, for the record, that... that I thought the applause for Nhlanhla Nene right at the end was quite something. Pravin, you know, there are two things. First, in his speech, in the written speech, there's nothing that says, I'm going to thank Nhlanhla Nene.
No.
He thanks Bongani Fuzile, all the other...
He doesn't thank Tom Moyane.
He doesn't thank SARS. Tom Moyane. He did thank the 14,000 employees at SARS, which I thought was fantastic.
Sorry, 13,999 of them.
And so he does that. Then he thanks Nhlanhla Nene, and people go ballistic, clapping.
They love that.
But I looked at the ones next to President Zuma, and they started clapping uproariously, and it was amazing. And then they said, oops. And they,
yeah, because I'm sure he didn't clap.
So I thought that was quite fun.
It could be a sign that there are serious cracks here, which we've discussed already in previous podcasts of this one. So, Justice, what about what's going on the campuses? Because there's a huge amount of justifiable lack of patience with what's going on campus, but there's also a huge amount of violence, and this violence is worrying a lot of people who are on the side of the students, but who are starting to feel that this may actually just be a bunch of vandals who are just trying to find some kind of expression in university and are not particularly interested in making real change or in developing themselves on campus. They'd rather burn down a building or a painting or a statue or something and complain about something. I mean, how much of it is becoming problematic now in a very systemic sense?
I think if you look at the Wits Feast Must Fall movement, it's been, this violence is not new. Think about what happened after the victory on student fees, which is reflected in the budget yesterday. Those students went back to Wits, then the Fees Must Fall movement at Wits basically crumpled within a week when it emerged that, oh, you know, the divisions between the sort of EFF leaning students and the Progressive Sesto. Youth Alliance, which is aligned to the ANC and so forth. Yeah. Then you had those fires burning through the night in late November. And the violence started then. And it's been going, it's been sort of bursting out at University of Pretoria. TUT was very bad. If you think of the violence last night at the Northwest University Mafikeng campus, and look back at November at UWC in the Cape, at UCT, where two Jemmy buses were burned down, it's very similar. So there's been, the underlying this whole Roads Must Fall movement, Fees Must Fall movement, there's been echoes of, like, there's been a violent streak embedded in there. And now it's becoming almost wherever the movement or whatever,
which is discrediting
it,
which is discrediting the legitimate movement.
It is taking away a lot of their capital. A lot of people were, in fact, if you look at the Fees Must Fall movement, you had mothers, people saying, my kids are absolutely right about what's happening here. If a 10.5% increase comes along, how will I afford it? How will my neighbor afford it? And so forth. So there was a lot of fellow feeling, a lot of sympathy for the movement. I think that there is a huge concern now that what was, particularly on Fees Must Fall, what was a legitimate, admirable campaign has morphed into something else. And so for me, the key thing is when you have this sort of thing happening on campuses across the country, when you have what happened at University of Pretoria in particular, where you have massive racial overtones to it, when you have AfriForum on the one hand and EFF Student Command on the other, and you're sitting there, you're watching this, and you're saying, well, these are young people. Do they actually have the experience, the vision to realize that there is a bigger, that this is a big country that where we have a long, long history of racial animosity, where we need a solution that just doesn't say, oh, you know, whites must get off the UP campus or blacks must get off the UP campus.
It's so simplistic and so binary. And what worries me...
It's gone on to UFS and it's gone on to other campuses.
What worries me is there seems to be almost an anti... I don't want to simplify this too much and make the same mistakes students are, but it seems to me that there's this real harboring of a viciousness against the idea of a rainbow nation and of kind of non-racialism, and that people like Nelson Mandela are being vilified at the moment by people who are not prepared to read the history of our country and are making it up in their own heads to suit their own immediate political ambitions.
Well, I think the Fees Must Fall movement had a legitimate fee freeze demand was a legitimate demand, which I think government was absolutely right to say, yes, we hear you and we're going to do something about it. I think though in our politics today and over the past 2 years, there's been first a questioning and now an all-out assault on the idea of what we achieved in 1994. All those arrangements are coming under pressure. I think we are going to see more of it. I don't think it's the end. It's not the end. I think we're right in the middle of it, but I think it's going to get more intense. The key thing is this. I agree with you. I think that the 1994 arrangements are coming under pressure. The idea that Nelson Mandela sold out keeps on being... I was amazed last night after you referred to when I went on CNN. It was all about, Nelson Mandela's compromise was built on black pain and so forth and so forth. No one stops and says, how far have we come since 1994?
And a version of history is being offered now which is not factually accurate. And people are making things up in order to have expedient points of view for the present, which take no recognition of the past into account.
Well, it also, to try and denigrate what was achieved in 1994, which took an incredible amount of vision.
And by the way, not offering for a second any alternative at the time, because the only alternative at the time might have been a civil war.
Well, and I think one of the things, okay, for me, the key thing to what we're going through now is that where are the solutions to what we're going through except to say...
This must fall.
Yeah, and so this is where I'm battling to find new leadership, to find new ideas about, okay, this is where we find ourselves. Why do we find ourselves where we are? And how do we get to the next step? Because right now, it's a rush to the absolute bottom of the barrel where it's, you said, I said, you are wrong, we're shouting at each other, and I don't see a single bit of solution on the... on the table. So,
well, speaking of leadership, what has Dr. Bonginkosi Nzimande said about this whole thing?
I like the way you used his full name. He said nothing, has he?
Dr. Blade Nzimande issued a statement 2 days ago, and the statement was, university administrations must deal with elements on the campuses that are disrupting and so forth and so forth. Now, for me, it's, well, you call them, there was an element to that statement that sort of said,
business as usual.
Let me put it this way. Dr. Bonginkosi Nzimande said in November that if these students continue, don't accept my demands, then students must, well, student, I'll start my own movement. Students must fall. Okay. 3 weeks later, yeah, he was saying, oh, you know, I was just making a joke with my colleagues. I don't know why ENCA put that on the on the thing. So he was apologizing for it. And I worry there's a sense. I think in the ANC, there is a sense that, oh, you know, they as in these unknown forces, are being either funded by foreign forces or there's a conspiracy and that let's just crush them. This is why Gwedeman Tashe said on Friday at the ANC's March Against Racism to hand over a memorandum to President Zuma that there are meetings at the American embassy to do this. That is why you have Colin Maynes saying to the City Press 3 weeks ago that, oh, you know, it's a conspiracy and the intelligence agencies need to investigate these people. So that stops you from saying, I want to reimagine this problem and find a way for us to enter a dialogue that will stop the violence, that will take the sensible people away from the people who just want anarchy out of that system, so that we have a clear delineation of, we want solutions to the problem and those guys don't want that, then how do we deal with that? And I think that's where the leadership failure comes in.
All right, you got to go. You've got a very busy day ahead. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Always a joy to be here.
We'll always have more to talk about. Maybe next week we'll have to do an hour. We'll see.
Yes.
Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's every Thursday on cliffcentral.com. In a short while, we'll talk to Dr. Blade Nzimande. Listen to me. We'll talk to Tamsin Nell, who works with Anthea. You don't mind being called Dr. Tamsin. You don't mind that. We'll just throw it at you.
No, I'll be a doctor for
today.
Yeah,
all right. For today, it's fine. But we'll talk some more about the budget, how it affects you, what it means to your bottom line, and also what it means to the markets, because there wasn't really much of a reaction.
No, there wasn't at all.
Yeah, so we'll have to talk about that too. Justice, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you in a week.
Cheers, guys.
There we go.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.